This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Well, we continue with our series on inflammatory bowel disease. Last week, we enjoyed a great discussion about one form, ulcerative colitis, with Dr. Priya Sengal. And this week, we continue with Dr. Reina Shivashankar. Both are superb gastroenterologists who have a special interest in the diagnosis and treatment of inflammatory bowel disease. And I'm proud to say both are my colleagues from Jefferson Gastroenterology and Hepatology. Welcome, Reina.
Thank you so much, Marianne. And the pleasure has been all mine working with you. You're awesome. So thank you so much for having me this afternoon. I'm excited to be here and chat.
Well, for our listeners, Dr. Reina Shivashankar is an associate professor of medicine at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College at Thomas Jefferson University. She's the associate director of the Inflammatory Bowel Center, the program director of the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Fellowship at the Division of GI and Hepatology at Jefferson University Hospital. Reina, let's start. It's kind of interesting. We had a chance to chat before we started. Crohn's disease was first described by Dr. Beryl Bernard Crohn, who lived from 1884 to 1983. He was born in East Harlem, and he trained at Mount Sinai and Columbia in New York. And I'm aging myself, but I started my fellowship, I think, 3 weeks before he passed away. And pretty neat to know that we were that close to such a giant in our GI world. Mm-hmm. So let's start with describing or defining, I guess, what Crohn's disease is and how it differs from its cousin, ulcerative colitis.
Yeah, no, that's a great place to start. So we know that, so inflammatory bowel disease, as you alluded to, Marianne, comes down into as a big umbrella diagnosis of ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And I think last week when you chatted with Dr. Sehgal, she probably told you that ulcerative colitis just affects the colon only. So it doesn't affect the small bowel, only affects the large bowel. So Crohn's disease itself, unfortunately, can affect anywhere from the mouth, through the food pipe, stomach, small bowel, colon, all the way down below to the area right around your bottom. So unfortunately, it affects all the way throughout the GI tract. And it's one of these, similar to ulcerative colitis, it's autoimmune, meaning that it can, your body, for whatever reason, sees your bowel as something that shouldn't be there, and it targets your bowel, causes inflammation, and the symptoms that I'm sure we'll talk about.
Well, colitis, for our listeners, I always remind my listeners, itis means inflammation. So sinusitis, tonsillitis, colitis, you have an inflamed colon. And I always would tell my patients the difference between these two inflammatory bowel conditions. Ulcerative colitis is broad and superficial. It inflamed, we see the inflamed lining of the colon. The colon is several layers thick. And it's like a first-degree burn. The surface is red. And when we look in with the scope, it's like when you look in your mouth, I always tell my patients, the lining of your throat and cheeks should be pale pink, shiny, smooth, no mm-hmm. white spots, which could be ulcers. Same with your colon. We look in, we want to make sure you don't have polyps or inflammation. And it can be a fairly big area, but it's superficial. So we can cool that a little more easily than Crohn's disease. It's more like a second or third degree burn. It might only involve a small area, but it goes deeply. So it can involve more than one layer. And if that's the case, it's like having a rubber band if it gets narrow and swollen. And so the symptoms we're going to talk about depend on what's affected, your colon, where you form stool, the small intestine, where you're supposed to absorb your calories. So let's talk about that a little bit. What are the symptoms of Crohn's disease?
Yeah, so as you said, it can, if it's affecting your colon and your small bowel, could be things like diarrhea, bleeding with those really bad ulcers. And since it affects the entire layer of your gut, your small bowel, your colon, you could get tracts called fistulas. So that can connect anywhere from your bowel to other parts of your bowel, from your bowel to your bladder where you're storing your urine, bowel to skin. And that can present with pain, kind of leakage, especially if you're having drainage out from below. So perianal fistulas are what we call them. So really the symptoms we think about are essentially pain, diarrhea, bleeding, weight loss, if it's affecting your small bowel and you're not absorbing nutrients, those are kind of the main symptoms.
Mm-hmm. So I like the way you call it the food pipe. I call it I-95, but when we swallow our food, the esophagus is sort of a sliding board that takes that bite of bread or sip of juice, delivers it to your stomach, which is not your whole belly. Really your belly is your abdomen, but inside is that little pouch that takes your meal, churns it up. And the first area it travels through is, as you said, the small intestine. That's the sponge that absorbs our calories. So if that's inflamed and not working, you might not absorb your vitamin D, your calcium, iron, all those nutrients. It's such a magical process. And once your food goes through there, gets broken down into those molecules that we need, vitamins, minerals, calories, the leftovers get shipped to the large intestine or colon to get packaged into cargo and shipped out. Mm-hmm. So again, if your small bowel is inflamed and depending on the area, you're missing vitamin B12, you're going to have symptoms possibly of numbness in your hands or feet and so on. So you mentioned all those possibilities. Mouth sores. Sometimes patients get mouth sores or even skin involvement. Mm-hmm. That can almost act like a barometer to the internal activity, yes?
Right, exactly. Some people have psoriasis or these big plaques on their elbows and knees. And, you know, they've done some studies where they've shown psoriasis might even pop up first, and then we get all these GI symptoms. So I think, Marianne, as you're alluding to, if you're having joint, because bowel inflammation can also target your joints as well, can present as mouth ulcers, skin rashes. So if you're having any of these symptoms and you're having kind of the symptoms of Crohn's, diarrhea, weight loss, belly pain, then definitely talking to your doc about workup is definitely important.
Mm-hmm. So, and Crohn's disease can occur at any point in time it wants to, usually under age 20, mm-hmm. 30. Mm-hmm. But when children have it, if they're not absorbing their calcium, that could cause a delay in their growth or development, bone issues. And we can talk about that later with treatment. But I guess we also have to worry that it can increase risk for blood clots and even some types of cancer. So, right. So Raina, diarrhea, as you said, it can be from the lining that's inflamed, or if part of the small bowel where we absorb our calories is inflamed, then we're not absorbing. And bile is one of those wonderful elements in our digestive process that might not be working properly if it's not absorbed. Weight loss can be because the person has a stricture. Let's talk about that, and they have obstruction.
Yeah. So if you've got a lot of inflammation in any part of your gut, then inflammation itself kind of just builds up on itself and causes areas of narrowing in your gut. And that can be related to inflammation and sometimes related to scar tissue and narrowing too. So certainly belly pain can be related to, if there's stuff that's trying to pass through a narrowed area in your bowel, it's kind of just getting stuck there, can cause a lot of pain. You're throwing up, you're not really passing gas from below or passing bowel movements. So another thing to worry about. And certainly those can lead to all these symptoms that we've been alluding to as well.
And I guess, as we say, if you have an area, even if it's, well, we talk about centimeters of involvement, but in a listener's mind, a few inches of the bowel, if it's a deep burn and it narrows into, like a keyhole, you can understand how food could get stuck there. And so we alter the diet to make it low fiber or even liquid for a while. Right. We can talk about that later. But fever is another marker that a person can have increased symptoms. So the fever can be just because the fire's in action or because they can have, as you mentioned, fistula. Let's talk about that. We have a minute left in this segment. The fistula, again, is a tunnel between two places that shouldn't be connected. Yeah?
Right. Exactly. And sometimes those fistulas, they can kind of burrow, because of all this inflammation that's going through the multiple layers of the bowel, it can kind of burrow through the bowel and lead to tracks to other organs around the area. So it's, I was saying the bladder, the skin, the skin all the way down below on your bottom. And also they can lead to areas of infection or abscess, like a collection of bacteria there, leading to fever. So that would be belly pain, fever, and that would be something that you could certainly be treated. So nothing that couldn't be intervened upon, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when we're talking about that, we think, boy, autoimmune, you know, we talked a little bit about this before, and anytime we talk about psoriasis or other, autoimmune means your immune system is your friend. And we want it to fight and destroy bacteria that come our way, viruses, or any environmental kind of nasty. But if it attacks you, if it attacks the auto, if it attacks the owner, not good. So we don't understand really what causes autoimmune conditions like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. But I think that will weigh into our discussion and treatment, because we can, if you have a virus and we have a medication that kills the virus or blocks it from landing on a cell like the COVID drugs, eureka. But sometimes we have to say, hey, immune system, calm down. You're beating up Mary or John that has Crohn's disease. And autoimmune, I think, is an important term to always review, yes?
Absolutely, yeah. And just as you said, that I think the positive sign is that we're identifying all of these proteins in the inflammation cascade that could be targeting the gut. And the pipeline is bright for those with Crohn's disease, just because there's so many new medications out there. So I think the horizon is it's looking up for everyone. So we've got a lot of choices.
So if we look back, I mean, I was a fellow and trainee when before HIV had a name, and we see all these beautiful, healthy young people just fading in front of our eyes with these infections. We learned a lot about the immune system with HIV, and then COVID made the whole population more familiar with terms like immunology terms. Your immune system reacts to an enemy, or it just turns on itself. So if there is any silver lining to COVID, hopefully it has helped people understand a little bit better what the immune system can do when it's behaving and when it's not behaving, and how we take advantage of that new knowledge to work on people with Crohn's disease, cancers, all those good things. Let's take a little break. And when we come back, more with Dr. Raina Sivashankar.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Thanks for returning to Your Radio Doctor. For those just tuning in, our topic this week is Crohn's disease with one of my favorite doctors, Dr. Raina Sivashankar, who really knows so much about ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease and helps people in a tremendous way. Raina, we defined Crohn's disease and how it's different from ulcerative colitis. And Crohn's disease, we said, can affect anywhere in the GI tract from mouth to the very end, the perianal area. but it can also affect extraintestinal or those parts of other parts of the body that are not included in the GI tract. Let's talk about those areas a little bit.
Yeah. So one of the most common areas that Crohn's disease can affect are your joints. So if you're having bowel symptoms and also getting swelling, pain in your hands, in your feet, those are kind of the most common joints, kind of the smaller joints there, as opposed to, but sometimes you can get larger joint involvement, like your knees, hips, low back, like your sacroiliac joints, that definitely can affect things. Or even your vertebral column all the way down below, you can get inflammation in those areas too. So there's joint pain. I think we had touched on some skin issues too. So things like psoriasis or some people can get big red rashes on their shins as well. Big fancy name for that, erythema nodosum, but things to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. And I guess too, if somebody gets kidney stones, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean their kidney's inflamed. Mm-hmm. It could be if your GI tract, where you're supposed to absorb your fluids or certain vitamins, isn't working properly.
Exactly.
And you become a little dehydrated, your kidneys, you're more likely to form stones. Some
exactly.
of these are side dishes or like yeah. anemia. If you're trickling blood, not enough to see on a regular basis, or if you're not absorbing those nutrients you need to keep your blood count up, like iron or B12 or folic acid, folate, you can become anemic and feel fatigued and all that.
Exactly.
So it's so important, if you think you have the diagnosis, ask your doctor, go tell your doctor everything that's happening so somebody can put it together for you, because it is fascinating, unless you're a patient who has
right.
it. But there's so many good people like you that can help our patients. So risk factors, there is no one set gene. But tell us about what we do know.
Yeah, we know that. So definitely it can run in families, but not all the time. And also certain ethnicities can have it. So it's usually Europeans, Northern Europeans. But the thing is that even in areas where the incidence of Crohn's used to be low, so in countries in Africa or Asia, those rates are increasing as well. And it might be related to our diet. We don't have 100% an answer to that, but probably something like our exposures when we were growing up, antibiotics. So it's probably just a big mix of things.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and you know what, Marianne, I think we had talked about this beforehand, but I didn't mention there was an interesting study where they looked at, I think there was a smaller study out of Sweden that looked at when McDonald's first went out to Sweden, when people were eating all these like processed foods and things like that, the incidence of Crohn's increased there too. So it's probably somehow related to diet. We just don't know how.
Mm-hmm. And so I was just reading an article earlier today about the gut microbiome is the hot topic out there. Does it mm-hmm. cause other diseases because of the way we absorb our calories? Does it add an element of different bugs in a person who has inflammation from a person who doesn't have symptoms? All those things are helpful to study. But you mentioned having a first degree relative means a sibling, a child or a parent that's mm-hmm. in a small, maybe 20% have a relative. But I think I told you about a case of a family that of 3 out of 4 sisters all have ulcerative colitis. What's mm-hmm. going on there? You know, mm-hmm. We see these trends, and Ashkenazi Jewish people, they are more likely to have BRCA, but they're also more likely to be affected by Crohn's disease. So that's
yes.
that's another clue for our listeners. If you are Jewish of Ashkenazi descent and there are symptoms, jump on it and make sure.
Mm-hmm.
And smoking. We talk about things we can't control, but smoking for so many reasons. Just, you know, bite your nails. Don't smoke. Do something mm-hmm. else. But, mm-hmm. right, smoking is really not your friend for that reason.
Absolutely. Yeah. And smoking can increase your risk. And also if you have something like Crohn's disease and you're smoking, that just increases your risk for needing more stronger therapies in order to control your disease too. So
mm-hmm.
100%
mm-hmm.
for multiple reasons, smoking, we should try and quit as much as
yeah.
possible.
Plus it probably increases your need for surgery if you have more severe disease.
Yeah.
So,
right.
yeah, well, turn your habits into something more fun,
yes.
like too much TV.
Yes.
So how do you make the diagnosis?
So it's based on your symptoms. So if you come in saying all these all of these things, so belly pain, you're having diarrhea, you're losing weight, you've got some of these mouth ulcers, joint pain. So then we say, hey, we should probably look into your colon, do a colonoscopy. So that's what we start with, I guess, basic blood work first. And there are some stool tests that we would do, because sometimes, you know, we just want to make sure that if we're thinking about inflammation in the gut, inflammation can be from inflammatory bowel diseases, so Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, but we want to make sure it's not infection as well. So we would probably send you off to the lab to do some stool tests, which thank you for doing. I know it's not anyone's cup of tea by any means, but just because if there's infection, we want to make sure we don't need to give you antibiotics or treat it in a different way. So do some lab work, get you scheduled for a colonoscopy. And then also, since we were saying earlier, since Crohn's disease can affect anywhere in the small bowel, we're missing a whole bunch of small bowel in the middle when we do the colonoscopy. So the colonoscopy only looks in your large bowel. So in order to take a look higher up in your bowel, your doctor would probably recommend you get some sort of MRI or CT scan to take a look higher up. So I guess long-winded way to say, Marianne, we'd probably send you off for lab work, colonoscopy, and some sort of like a imaging test.
But you make a really good point. The GI tract is the colon, or that I call it the trash compactor. It's where all the stuff you don't need gets packaged and shipped out. So the a colonoscopy looks at the colon. That's probably about a third of your GI tract. Mm-hmm. And Crohn's can sit there or could go a little bit above it in the ileum. People have heard that, some people may have heard of ileitis, which is the small bowel or the sponge where we absorb. And then the upper GI tract is esophagus, stomach. So we kind of think of the GI tract in thirds. We can look about a third of the way up from below. We can look down with endoscopy, esophagus, stomach, and a little bit of the small bowel. But sometimes we have to use a longer scope to reach that middle. But I think, you know, if people realize that we have access to those areas if we need to get there. But an MRI is outside your body and not invasive and can still give us great information. So a couple things. We're going to talk about the therapies, if you would. But Advil, Metaprin, Nuprin, all those Advil, ibuprofen meds or Naprosyn meds don't necessarily cause Crohn's. But if you have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, they can stir up an episode, yes?
Absolutely. We say, if at all possible, trying to avoid those medications for aches and pains, headaches, excuse me, because they can tip you off into a flare of Crohn's, that would be the best thing. So if you need anything for pain, and it's safe for you to do Tylenol, probably would be a safe pain medication to use.
But interestingly enough, you could see if we call them anti-inflammatories, you would think they would put out the fire, but we use a different version of anti-inflammatory meds. Maybe some people have heard about mesalamine. Of course, the ultimate fire stopper is steroids, which might put out a really extreme case immediately, but why do we try to stay away from steroids?
Yeah. So if you get started on steroids, we want to make sure that we have an exit strategy just to get you off of it, just mainly because long-term use of it can affect your bones, can cause osteoporosis, affect your blood sugar, especially want to be careful in those who have diabetes already, can cause things like glaucoma, a lot in skin thinning. So a lot of issues with steroids. We use it at the beginning kind of to cool off all this inflammation, but you want to make sure if you're getting started on that, that you and your doctor have a plan for a more long-term strategy, because it's not going to be the steroids.
And I guess if somebody has a flare, somebody, you treat them, they get better, and then they have a flare. Mm-hmm. One of the things I would think you always do is say, is there some other bug that stirred up the bowel? So we check a stool culture to make sure it's not salmonella or shigella or something. Right. And that might be when you'd use antibiotics. But the two other categories of drugs fascinate me. We said autoimmune. So if we want to say, hey, immune system, take a rest, you use a category of drugs called immune modulators that people might recognize, words like azathioprine, cyclosporin that transplant patients might get, methotrexate. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about biologics, because I think that's the coolest thing.
It is really cool. And so they're all antibody-based medications. So they're all, as we were talking about earlier, Marianne, they're all of these little proteins called cytokines that can affect your bowel. They kind of cause an inflammatory reaction that lead to bowel inflammation, the ulcers. So what we want to do is kind of bind up those proteins by using these biologics. I think our colleague, Dr. Patty Kozak, has a really nice analogy. She uses a Pac-Man analogy. So like the biologic is kind of the Pac-Man kind of binding the protein or its target to get rid of it. So that's what the biologic does. So it kind of gets rid of the cytokine or that protein that's going to be targeting the gut and causing the inflammation.
Mm-hmm. So our immune system is our friend, but if it gets out of hand because it's attacking you, mm-hmm. the immune system, when it meets a virus or bacteria, makes these proteins, and we want to say, you know, back off a little, then the Pac-Man drugs, the biologics, will try to get them under control. So side effects, you're having good luck with the biologics in terms of,
yeah.
I mean, I guess that you would you consider patients on biologics or immune modulators as immunosuppressed? I mean, they have to be more careful, yeah?
Yeah, I would. You just want to be careful, but it's all about preventive measures. I think it's something that we all really should be doing, and we all probably are doing good hand hygiene, keeping up with vaccinations.
That's the point.
Being mindful when you're, yeah, exactly. Being mindful when you're in crowded spaces. But really, as you said, just keeping up with vaccines is the major thing.
And the beautiful thing is with these newer meds, they're not super new, which makes it safe to feel safe to use them. Controlling the immune system or attacking some of the proteins your immune system makes, they're a whole lot better than steroids, especially with children.
Yes.
Steroids can, as you say,
absolutely.
Full face, blood sugars, hairy, weight gain can destroy your bones. So the more choices we have, how long do you keep patients on therapy, Rena?
It's a good question. So I say, let's start off at least a year. Let's make sure you're doing well, your bowel is healed, your quality of life is better. You know, you're getting to your kids' graduation, their soccer games, you're not worried about staying close to the bathroom. But I think really now it's, if that is all going in the right direction, and if patients are feeling well, then it becomes a longer term therapy. Just because we know if we stop these medications, then there's a 20 to 30% chance of flare within 1 year after stopping. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of studies going on now to say, when do we stop these medications in people who are doing well? So I'd say stay tuned. I'll probably have a better answer going forward.
Well, and that's why people like you that devote all of your time to every day, all day, inflammatory bowel, I want to come and see Dr. Rena Shivashankar or Dr. Patty Kozak, because you have that judgment, because every case is unique. Stay with us during the break to hear the story of a true champion of treating Crohn's disease, my former mentor and colleague, Dr. Franz Goldstein. And now for your real champion. I call this segment Ode to a Mentor. As medical students, we study all specialties. During my time in surgery, I was convinced I'd be a hand surgeon. But on the first day of internal medicine, I opened the chart of a patient with a complex case of Crohn's disease. Along came a dignified senior attending who sat down, introduced himself as Dr. Franz Goldstein, and gave me a private lesson on inflammatory bowel disease, then thanked me for listening and for helping to care for his patient. This was a scholar and a gentleman. With time, I saw him as a mentor. Spellbound by his interaction with each patient, listening well, responding with caring, detailed explanations, every word, every action reflected his empathy and commitment. I quickly realized that I walked in the shadow of a living encyclopedia. After I trained in GI, I was fortunate to join his practice at Lankenau Hospital and became a partner. He never referred to me as a woman doctor, never treated me as his junior partner. I was always his respected colleague. Over the years, I became fascinated by Franz Goldstein, the man. Methodical, punctual, calm. He quoted medical literature back to the 1930s, loved the opera, spoke five languages without an accent, and his backyard looked like Longwood Gardens. It wasn't until the eve of his 90th birthday that I had the honor of hearing his life story. At age 19, he and his sister, her husband, and toddler were on a train to Auschwitz. Their plan? At the next stop, Franz would jump first, catch the baby, then the others would follow. Well, Franz jumped, but woke up 3 days later after a concussion, never to see his sister again. It took 4 days to walk to his hometown, where neighbors hid him in their attic, Anne Frank style, for over 2 years. On rare occasion, he'd go outside in the dark at night for a breath of air, never wanting to be seen by the grandchildren who might reveal their family's secret. While in isolation, he kept a strict schedule of daily reading, writing, and caring for his cat. The structure was his saving grace. That's probably why, as a colleague, we met every morning at exactly 8:15 to discuss patient calls. He had the same coffee, the same Danish, cut in the same 8 pieces every day. The family had 5 daughters, and one sister had a boyfriend forced to serve in Hitler's army. At his own risk, the young soldier gave Franz a gun for protection. Borders were always changing between Poland and Germany. He had to learn Polish and Russian without an accent to survive. Sadly, Franz was the only member of his family to escape war-torn Germany, but he was always thankful to those who helped him survive and begin a new life. With only 3 semesters of college, he came to the U.S. in 1947. Fate led him to find work as a technician in the Jefferson Research Lab of Dr. John Gibbon, where Franz's work led to a major breakthrough and the first successful surgery with the heart-lung machine. He then graduated first in his Jefferson class of 1953, distinguished himself as a resident, then trained in both GI and lung disease, later recognized nationally and internationally with multiple awards, and was hailed as the president of the American College of Gastroenterology and the International Bacchus GI Society. He wrote 143 papers and practiced until the age of 82. On several occasions, young Franz had looked death in the face. When I asked about his long hours of training in 2 fields at once, he said, after so many years of misery, anything would be better. He had survived the devastation of war and appreciated every day he had the chance to make the world a better place. Of his work with Dr. Gibbon, he humbly called himself a lowly lab tech and said, I did what I could. It was just a small step. I greatly admired Dr. Gibbon. During his final days in hospice at age 91, he recalled an epiphany he had during the war. He promised himself he'd never get ahead at the expense of another person and said, as I look back, I worked hard and I never did anything to be ashamed of. I never expected anyone to donate or do anything for me. And to make a new life, I'd have to do it for myself. I hope I helped a few people along the way, which we know he did. 2 days ago was February 23rd, his birthday, and I always think of him on that day. It was very painful to say goodbye to my dear friend and mentor, a shining star in the medical community. Franz Goldstein was brilliant, refined, and humble. Grateful for his new life, he devoted his time, talent, and energy to the art of healing. It was painful for him to look back, so he focused on the future. We spent years in practice together, and at that last visit, he told me he always looked at me as a daughter. Surely Providence brought us together. My own father who had passed away was Frank, and now my mentor was Franz. And it wasn't until I read his death notice that I learned that the sister he lost in the war was Mary Ann. We salute you, Dr. Franz Goldstein. You're a real champion.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back back to your radio doctor. We're learning so much today about Crohn's disease with our guest, Dr. Raina Shivashankar, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Sydney Kimmel Medical College and the Associate Director of the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Center at Jefferson GI. Raina, we were talking about treatment of Crohn's disease, and we compare it always to ulcerative colitis, both forms of inflammatory bowel. Let's talk about nutrition because, you know, on a regular basis, we could say the Mediterranean diet is best, but this is very special because, as we said, Crohn's disease can light up and cause inflammation in any part of the GI tract. One of the scariest areas is the ileum or different parts of the small bowel, that part of the GI tract where we absorb calories. And if that's inflamed, A, we want to decrease the workload and let it cool off, but we really want to get it healthy again so we're absorbing our calories, fluids to stay hydrated, and the right nutrients like iron and B12 and all those good things. What role does nutrition play when in the a person who has a flare and in a person who's in a steady state?
I think it's a great question. I think it's an area that we've been learning a lot about in the past 10 years. So certainly if you're in a flare and if you're one of those people who we were talking about earlier have areas of narrowings in your bowel or strictures, that's when we say, you know, avoid a lot of roughage, do a low fiber diet, eat softer foods just to get things kind of passed through your inflamed bowel, kind of passing through those areas of narrowing. You just want to take it a little easy. And in terms of other areas of nutrition, we, you know, if you're doing well and healthy, when we've looked at studies to figure out what types of foods are the biggest risk, so things like red meats or processed foods have been linked to GI tract inflammation. So it's not necessarily an all or none, but moderation is probably the key to life. So moderating the amount moderate amount of processed foods, red meats is the best thing. But otherwise, there's no one particular diet, unfortunately.
There's no magic.
No magic, sadly enough.
Right. Well, again, I mean, we're adult, we're internists, so we take care of patients 18 and older. I've never taken care of it. Well, one time a 16-year-old, pediatric cases. But I know I was reading about children. Sometimes instead of starting their first episode with steroids in an acute episode, sometimes they use what we call exclusive enteral nutrition. Mm-hmm. So for our listeners, when you eat a ham and cheese sandwich and a bowl of soup, it's pretty complex food because then your stomach acid and all those steps along the way have to break it down into molecules of carbs, protein, and fat. Yeah. So that small intestine, the area where we absorb our sponge, is absorbing molecules of the ham and cheese or, you know, the potato or whatever. In Crohn's disease, if that area of your bowel is inflamed, we can make it easier by saying, here, just drink this fluid that's made of really basic molecules of protein, fat, carbs. It probably does not taste very good, but it might help cool the bowel off. But imagine being a little child, going to school, watching your friends have peanut butter and jelly or whatever, and I want to drink this goo that tastes like toenails. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, I guess for adults that realize the value of it, does that ever, have you ever done that? Or
I actually haven't, but for kids, they've looked at that and it's actually helped them get off of steroids and help their bowel. I think it's, you know, interestingly more of a, the pediatricians use it more for treatment than we do as adults. I guess it's, you know, maybe kids follow instructions a little better than we do. It's harder for us after we've tasted so many different foods to get on that sort of diet. But I think it is really interesting, but unfortunately it hasn't really moved over to the adult
world. Well, I guess too, we want to let their bones form. So we'll do almost anything reasonable to avoid steroids. So, and the other thing is you want to get the inflammation cooled off because you mentioned earlier surgery. What happens sometimes if somebody has a stricture and we treat it, doesn't get better, we turn to surgery to remove that area that's wrapped in a rubber band. Right. Tell us a little about why we want to avoid surgery.
Yeah. So the thing is, if you're, as you were saying earlier, Marianne, the small bowel, so we've got our small intestines and large intestines. The small intestines are where we absorb the majority of all these nutrients that we've been talking about. So the more that we're cutting out and cutting out and cutting out the small bowel, the less area there is to absorb all of this. So that's where we definitely want to avoid surgery. And that's where we want to be just aggressive and heal things.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I guess, isn't there a risk when you know, it's like guacamole, you hit one pop up and then another one.
Exactly.
You cut out a piece, like a narrow banded area, and you're just asking for it to, how many of those recur like an inch or two behind it
exactly.
in a year? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we just want to, because we know that unfortunately it just it may pop up elsewhere. So we want to make sure we're preserving.
Sure. The bowel. So for many years, we were concerned about an increased risk of lymphoma in patients with Crohn's disease. But now there's a question as to whether the risk for developing colorectal cancer, if it's almost as much as it is in ulcerative colitis, what do we know about that?
So if someone has the entirety of their colon inflamed, so a Crohn's colitis, it's probably similar to an ulcerative colitis picture. So we want to keep a close eye on them and make sure they're getting their colonoscopies every 1 to 3 years. But if it's, you know, less than a third of their colon involved, probably the risk is lower compared to someone whose entire colon is inflamed.
That's very hopeful information for people because this is all scary. We're sharing it so people know how to prevent and protect themselves. But that's what's so good about you, Raina. You know how to categorize the topics. Pregnancy is always a concern. We don't want the disease to be out of control when a mom is carrying a developing baby. But I guess the questions are, does the disease affect fertility or the developing baby? How about the treatments? Do they affect fertility or the developing baby?
So the disease, the short answer is no. So having, just by virtue of having Crohn's or ulcerative colitis does not affect fertility rates. I think, you know, a lot of, if you read out there, that it does. Some women voluntarily don't want to have kids just because the concern of, are you going to pass this along to your kids, or a concern about medications, things like that. But the disease itself doesn't. And in terms of medicines, what we do know is that most of all of these older biologic medications are actually quite safe for both mom and baby, because the most important thing is we want to make sure that mom has her disease under control and healed, because that leads to the best outcomes for both mom and baby.
Exactly. And it's so much easier today than certainly when I started training. I mean, we had ultrasounds back then, but the metrics we're able to follow to keep the mom safe and healthy and the baby are so much better. And as you say, you just don't want people to avoid pregnancy because they think, you know, we've made so much progress with it. I guess that said, when you want to follow a patient on a regular basis, especially as we keep reminding people, if the inflammation involves that part of your GI tract where you're absorbing calories, we want to see you, even if you're feeling well, on a regular basis, to check your labs, to check those vitamin levels like vitamin D, vitamins A, you know, A, D, E, K, all those vitamins that can affect your blood count and your function, vitamin B12, iron levels, if you're not absorbing it or if you're trickling blood. Tell us about that. What labs do you check, you know, without making me make it too boring, but there's a really important reason to see you on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we want to make sure that, as you're saying, that you're absorbing things. So we check your iron levels, your B12, your vitamin D, because that all leads to energy levels, mood, things like that. We want to make sure that we're checking your liver enzymes, kidney functioning, your inflammatory markers. Those are usually, so that for the disease itself, to see how well you're absorbing, and also that's just routine monitoring when people are on these medications as well.
I know you mentioned too that you check stool. I guess as stool travels through, it can pick up cells that have inflammatory markers. Mm-hmm. Who figured that out? That's ingenious.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Yeah, there is. The nice thing about it is that the test that I think you're referring to is what's it called, a fecal calprotectin. So it's the inflammatory test. It picks up white blood cells that cause inflammation. So the nice thing is that it's a non-invasive way to pick up inflammation in the colon. So that way we don't have to keep putting people through colonoscopies. We can kind of follow that up after starting a new medication to see how the medication is working.
Because I'm sure some people either grow to tolerate their symptoms or they might be on the verge of a flare. And if you can capture it because you say, you know, everything looks good, let's check these few labs. Let's have you bring in a specimen and you see the fire starting to smolder or spark. You can stay ahead of a bad flare, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because now we not only want to make sure that your symptoms are under control, but we want to make sure that the lining of your bowel and your colon has healed. So things like those non-invasive tests will clue us in. Should we be doing more invasive testing, or is something, you know, is everything looking okay?
You know, after I did training at GI, I stayed in my fellowship to study nutrition. And one of the things I learned a lot about was nutrition called TPN, total parenteral. Mm-hmm. So if you think of a paralegal as somebody who's, you know, in law, but they're not a lawyer, or, you know, parenteral means outside the GI tract. We're feeding you by not using the GI tract. We put an IV into the patient and give them really high levels of calories. Sometimes we use that when a person's GI tract, an area of Crohn's, is really, really, I mean, it's nice for people to know. We don't do that often. Mm-mm. But if somebody has an obstruction and we really are trying to let it cool off to avoid surgery, tell us a little bit about TPN. I guess we don't get to that stage as often as we used to because of these great drugs.
Yeah, no, and it's great. And you're right. I can't even remember the last time I prescribed TPN, which is a good thing because certainly we want to avoid it if possible. But in cases where we need it, it's usually, as you said, Marianne, it's for someone who just is not absorbing things from their small bowel or waiting for their inflammation to cool off. Or unfortunately, if someone is waiting for surgery and we need to bulk up their nutrition just to make sure their wound healing after surgery is going to be good. So it's essentially you get a line into your upper arm or usually in the upper arm now, and you put basically nutrient-rich liquid into there. So that'll give you all the calories, minerals, vitamins that are necessary. And the goal is hopefully temporary amount of time, and then we can get you off of that.
Yeah, and you're putting the bowel at rest, but the person's still getting their protein, carbs, et cetera. You can't heal if you're protein or nitrogen deficient. So we're still feeding the person, putting their bowel, making it quiet so they can be prepared for surgery or heal from stricture or something. But we talked about where we trained. You trained at the Mayo Clinic and then University of Penn, unbelievable credentials. My TPN, I train at Sloan Kettering, which is such a humbling place to train. 20 floors of patients. They had a floor of acute leukemia patients, a floor of chronic. 20 floors of patients who either can't eat because they have a head and neck cancer or a GI tract issue, or they don't want to eat. So we might have 85, 90 people that we round on every day. And fortunately, I think you would agree, the progress we've made with the therapies keeps us from having to use IV nutrition, which is fascinating, but we try to avoid that as well.
Yes.
Let's take a little break, and when we come back, I'll wrap up with Dr. Raina Shivashankar from Jefferson GI.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We are so grateful that we were able to share the company of Dr. Raina Shivashankar from Jefferson University Hospital's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Center. Raina, you are just a fountain of information. And Crohn's disease is not so uncommon, but not everybody's fortunate enough to live near a center of excellence like Jefferson's IBD Center. What's new on the horizon?
Yeah, so there is, it's, you know, the horizon is bright, Marianne, for those with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. There are so many new medications out there. A lot of new, as we were talking about, there are all these little proteins that cause inflammation. So a lot of new medications that target different proteins in this inflammatory cascade. So a whole host of new medications for patients.
Mm-hmm. So people might be familiar with, as we said earlier, if you're just joining us, Crohn's disease causes your bowel to light up anywhere it wants, from the mouth to the very end of that highway, the rectum, or even around the anus. We didn't talk about that as much, but it can cause real havoc for patients psychologically as well as physically. It can be a tough disease, but even since I was in training, so many strides have been made. So we can cool the inflammation with anti-inflammatory meds, but they only go so far. We used to have to reach for steroids, which have tough side effects. Just like COVID, the immune system is meant to attack and destroy viruses or bacteria, but sometimes it reacts against yourself, and that's why it's called autoimmune. So these new meds, immune modulators, we can say, just relax a little bit, immune system, or the immune system pushes a button and stirs up these proteins to go into action and cause inflammation. So we can either cool off the immune system itself or destroy the proteins it makes. And they're the ones called biologics, yes?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
So, Raina, fecal transplant, we alluded earlier. Is there a difference in the microbiome or the bugs in the bowel of a person with inflammatory bowel versus somebody who doesn't have inflammatory bowel?
Yeah, that's. I think that's kind of the new area where everyone is looking at. So there is. There are slight differences in the amount and type of bacteria. I think that, you know, the idea of doing these stool transplants or getting a stool donation to kind of resituate your gut microbiome or get new healthy bacteria in your gut. So that's been tested for Crohn's disease, believe it or not. It's just that the jury is still kind of out on whether or not it really helps. When they've done studies to say that it has helped, but patients still haven't gotten off of steroids. And we know that our end game is always getting off of steroids. So I think hopefully time will tell. Maybe sometime in the future, it will have some role for that.
Well, the tough thing too is if we study what bacteria or what cooties are in a person's stool sample, what's chicken and egg? A person who has a normal colon lining and no symptoms, we say, oh, they have these 10 bugs. Then we take a sample from somebody with ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, and they're different. Did the difference in bugs cause the inflammation, or did inflammation allow certain other bugs to take hold? So I guess that's the other issue. But fecal transplant means, in some cases, and we had a whole show on Clostridium difficile, C. diff. Our listeners, some of them know that that's a bacteria that forms after antibiotics, that we take a stool from a healthy person and somehow implant it into the person with Crohn's disease and see if populating with the different bugs from a healthy person can cool off the inflammation. Yes.
Yep. But, you know, and it may help with symptoms, but you know, we don't know if it's going to be healing your bowel or getting rid of those ulcers. That's the other piece of the puzzle, too.
Good point. So, again, it's always, what did my mother teach us? Whenever you're sick, if you're not offending your doctor, if you get a second opinion, and if you're not fortunate enough to live near a Jefferson or a place that has a center devoted to just inflammatory bowel disease, stop in and see Dr. Raina Shivashankar or Dr. Patty Kozach or Dr. Priya Sehgal. How would somebody reach you if they wanted to make an appointment, Raina?
I think calling the Jefferson number, the 1-800-JEFF-NOW would be the best way to do it. But I'd be happy to chat with anyone. And yes, as Marianne said, getting a second opinion, no one should feel bad about making their doctor feel bad. The most important thing is we're all doing the right thing for you. So we want to make sure that you're getting all your questions answered. But 1-800-JEFF-NOW is the way to go.
So 1-800-JEFF-NOW, you want to make sure you turned every stone because maybe they catch you at a different point in time. Dr. Raina Shivashankar, thank you so much. We really appreciate being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed this. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday afternoon at 5 here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to any and all of our shows again on audacy.com, audacy.com. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, for their continued support and for their trust in my content. Remember, this Monday is November 11th, Veterans Day. At the 11th hour, on the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, the armistice was signed to end World War I, in which 20 million lives were lost around the world. We now mark November 11 as the day when we honor all the men and women who have ever served in our country's armed forces. Thanks to their bravery and commitment, we enjoy freedom and live in a country where we have the privilege and the duty to vote for our leaders. Take time to say thank you to a veteran on Monday. Please join our Diapers for Darlings campaign. Donate a bag of disposable diapers for a needy mother at this time of record inflation. Website, yougivegoods.com. That's yougivegoods.com. And please continue to pray for peace in our troubled world, our beloved country, in each of our own families, and in each of our own hearts. This is Your Radio Doctor, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love, and always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.